This is The Threshing Floor, Spirituality Unbound.
Welcome once again to The Threshing Floor. I'm Randy Moggins. It has been a long, long time since I have addressed what I hope may still be an audience to The Threshing Floor. It feels as though every show that I've done for the last year would be the last show. This is not that. At least that's not my intention. And it was never my intention to walk away and go on hiatus. What's been happening is that over the last 24 months that I have kind of unwound my own spirituality. And I have to say it's my own spirituality. I began to pierce the illusions of everything that came before this. And that includes the constructs of Christianity. When I began doing this show, I was very deeply entrenched in religion my entire life. I came out of a church, and then I entered another religious arena called Alternative Christian Radio, and began to immerse myself in that, thinking that surely there would be another way to approach this. And so for 8 years, we kind of drove up the middle of the entire milieu that's Christianity. The idea that somehow you could use a book to divine God, that you could then take that book and you can unravel it and unthread it and understand it. And many people believe that we did that with The Threshing Floor in the third day. I'm not convinced that we did. What I'm convinced of is that in the 20-some years that I spent studying this book, I never really came to terms with how it has been used. It is a book that was constructed. That's the first thing we need to clarify. The Bible was the product of the Nicene Council. It was established by Constantine, and it was ordained by the clerics who had began to assemble around the first organized Christian church, the first church, which was basically a transformation of the Roman Empire. As one person has put it, they basically took off the robes and crowns of the emperors and put on the robes and crowns of the popes. And it became a power structure, and it still is today. It became a methodology for mind control on a high level, because once these books were selected and compiled and began to go out into the circuits of the Roman Empire, which at that time included the Eastern Empire as well as the Western Empire, it became possible to begin enforcing reinterpretation and orthodoxy. There is no difference between what occurs today and what occurred then. It's simply a more fractured structure. Christianity, as you would call it, rests now on the tenets of the idea that what was presented to us as the history and the teachings of Jesus Christ and interpreted pretty much by Rome. There are variations. There are 10,000, 50,000, 30,000 variations on the Roman interpretation, but they all stay within certain parameters. So this book that has been used and reinterpreted and recompiled and edited and redacted and expanded and footnoted and concordanced and lexiconed simply became the way to understand God in the era of the press, the Gutenberg press. The written word became more powerful as it was published. It became possible to entrain people's minds to a prescribed method of belief, while at the same time Rome was basically scorching out the enemies, destroying the Gnostics, destroying all of the remaining remnants of the outscouring, the groups of people that did not agree with what was orthodoxy. And this book basically became the sword which slayed millions of people. Flash forward today and look at what you call alternative Christianity. We won't even deal with the churches. But in a sense, we have to deal with the churches because really alternative Christianity was simply, well, it was really part of the Hegelian dialect. It was the backlash against the established institutions. It was a means for those to escape corrupt institutions while retaining the vestiges of their Christian faith. And in doing so, all they did was they recoalesced around a new platform called the Internet. And I was a part of that. I was actually an early part of that because we started doing Threshing Floor online in 2003. At a time when there really was nothing called podcasting. We were simply putting audio files on a website. But the backlash to established Christianity largely found its voice in alternative Christianity on shortwave radio and on the Internet. I have to say that in all of the things that I've done in my life, I don't think I've ever been in as many battles, suffered as many wounds, witnessed the absolute cruelty of humanity as I have in this great coliseum called Internet Christianity. And that's a process that actually has continued right into this year, where finally I have severed the ties. These shows that I will continue to put out on Threshing Floor need to be distinguished from what I guess you would say my former colleagues, for the most part, are doing. I've never run the course of the crowd. I've always run contrary. Even when I'm working with people, I tend to be sort of a lone wolf. And I came to the horrible realization a few months ago that I really didn't have a lot in common with the people anymore that I worked with. At the same time, I began doing another show called Off Planet Radio, where I am still a lone wolf, and I still very much a lot of times feel very lonely in doing that. But that platform gives me ability to express things on another level that I cannot do within the context of Christianity. What is going to happen with this show is over the next few months, it's probably going to move websites. It's going to move servers because the support financially for the show simply isn't there anymore. But having said that, I will say that there are a few people who found me through this show who have continued to support me and continue to support what I do. And I am eternally grateful for them and for everybody who has ever contributed to this show in any shape, manner, or form, whether it was financial or otherwise. The reason why I'm retaining Threshing Floor is because I have not walked away from my faith. My faith has expanded in a way that I don't think a lot of mainstream Christians would understand. I don't think alternative Christians understand it at all. I find myself in this strange position where churched mainstream Christians, people who come from Catholic, Presbyterian, Episcopal, Methodist, you know, list them, the mainstream churches, have more in common with me than the people in alternative Christianity. And the reason for that is the people in alternative Christianity are functionally very damaged people. They are angry. They are legalistic. They are hurt people who continue to hurt other people and continue to blast hell and damnation from every web page and from every podcast that they do. The group of people that I worked with over the last few years are gone. That includes Sue Patterson and the Third Day Show. That includes the Watchman Weekly group. And the reason why they're gone isn't because I tossed them. It's because basically they have distanced themselves from me because they can't countenance what I'm doing. In the case of the Third Day, that study had reached an effective end. It simply had nowhere to go, and Sue was not willing to put the time and energy into it to keep it going. And that's her personal business. It's not something that I say with a great deal of criticism. I enjoyed working with her, but I feel her premises in the study itself are wrong. I don't think you can divide people into groups and issue judgments or blessings based on the particular group that people are in. Unlike most people in this area of media, I do not believe that salvation is anything other than an individual, ongoing process of identifying with your Creator and finding out who you are. This is not a group salvation theology, and it never was. I find the same thing in the New Age, interestingly enough. I'm in contact with a lot of New Age people, and I notice that they too tend to subscribe to group ideologies. Oh, you see it right now on the internet over 2012 and what's going on in the underground and how aliens are going to save us and how America can be taken back, but we're going to do it with divine help, as David Wilcock likes to point out. But it's no different than Christianity. It's no different than religion. It's just another religion under another title. It's a group mentality. It's a group spirituality. It's designed to entrain and reinforce according to some orthodoxy, whether it's the Bible or whether it's channeled entities like Michael the Archangel or the Arcturians or aliens from planet who knows where. It's a mindset. People do not like to be alone, but unfortunately spirituality is carved out of you pressing in to your own personal, deep questions, doubts, fears, and drilling through it to get to the other side to find the light within you. It was Jesus Christ who said the kingdom of God is within you. It was also Jesus Christ who restated, "Did I not tell you that you are gods?" Humanity, and Christianity especially, cannot embrace their own godness. It doesn't mean that you place yourself as creator of universes. It means that you place yourself as being the creator of your life, your reality, and your understanding of who you are spiritually. Getting lost in group mentalities, having your little conferences, doing your little group groups on the internet, having podcasts with groups of people discussing scripture, is just more of the groupthink. And about 24 months ago, I started distancing myself from this. I started moving away from the groupthink after I had been burned by, well, just about every Christian minister I've ever known. I don't have any friends left in that arena. None. Let me repeat that again. None. Because all of the Christian ministers that I met on the internet, with maybe one exception, and that exception is James Lloyd, attempted to manipulate and control me, or attempted in some way to exploit me and to use me. So they're gone. And the people I associate myself with, I do so now under terms of a contract which says we have an equal exchange of values, we respect each other, but we do not attempt to manipulate or control or to influence one another's spiritual understanding. What is occurring in this present time of the shift, and we've been in it for a number of years, is a magnification of spiritual powers on the earth. It's light and darkness in sharp contrast. And that sharp contrast is the product of changing energies, of the movement of the time clocks of the age. But in one sense, it's also, as people begin to wake up, they begin to move and tilt their own reality, and that reality moves into the collective consciousness. And yes, there is a collective consciousness. The human race is part of the great quanta. The human race is consciously connected to the quantum universe, and you can't get around it. So as the energetics change, the planet itself changes, but the contrast becomes sharper. What I find with most people who now operate as so-called remnant or alternative Christians is they're more establishment than the establishment. They simply don't have the institutional trappings. They're not passing offering plates or building churches. But what they actually are building is a monument to their own understanding. And I did this too. I would say that over the 7 years that I did shows with Sue Patterson, we built up a fairly large body of work that one could call doctrinal understanding, teaching. And I would say that in that time I watched as people kind of adhered themselves to those teachings and then turned around and began to distort and pervert them almost instantly. And it was an amazing thing to watch. It's like almost like you got the macrocosmic view of what an apostle would see looking down the line, maybe 1,000 years or 1,500 years. You begin to see the distortion set in. You begin to understand that what, if you were the Apostle Paul, you wrote his letters to a specific church, got turned into legal doctrine. That effectively, instructions that you gave to an individual or person were then kind of morphed into this dogma that was applied whole cloth. And I can't help but think that that's probably the view that I got as I watched what Sue and I did. I also watched as Sue herself kind of hardened and became entrenched in her own teachings to the point where she did not suffer anyone disagreeing any longer. And as time went on, and especially over the last 2 years, I began to distance because I began to see the holes in this. What is called Bible prophecy would be more correctly called biblical prophecy, but it has a problem. It relies on the language which has been transmitted to us through numerous language changes, numerous textual transmissions, numerous translational and clerical issues over the years. It relies on a lexicon, the languages we do not understand with our minds and were written in times which we don't understand. The best studies of history give you a two-dimensional view of a period of work. It does not give you a three-dimensional, much less a fourth-dimensional view of the mindset, the mind constructs of the people living in that time and what they wrote and how they were living. History itself is distorted because, well, the winners of conflicts rewrite history, and that's exactly what's occurred. So in a long sense of the thing, I could no longer suffer people who set themselves up as authorities on something as shaky as this biblical system, which is separate from the Bible itself. The Bible itself needs to be looked at for what it is. It's a collection of writings, and it's a collection of writings that come from many different sources. Some inspired, some not so inspired. Some designed to transmit information to groups of people. Some designed to transmit information to particular people, individuals. And some, I believe, designed almost like notes you write to yourself. The Psalms is a good example of that. They're beautiful, but you have to be careful pulling doctrine out of it. You have to be careful pulling prophecy out of it. A lot of what we have about the historical Jesus, for instance, doesn't really bear up when you look at history. Now, does that mean I don't think Jesus existed? No. What it means is that I don't believe we understand what really occurred there, and to a large degree, what has been transmitted is a recoloring of history. By the same token, the gospel sayings of Jesus stand up remarkably well against the backdrop of a lifetime. If you live by these words, they are, in fact, the complete application of all of the laws, all of the proverbs, and all of the good things that I believe were trying to be transmitted in the Bible. But then again, the Bible's problematic because when you go back into the Old Testament, you've got a lot of gods there. You have this god called Yahweh, YHWH, the Tetragrammaton god. But then you have other gods. You have, in Genesis, what is basically a group god entity creating the planet, if you read correctly what is written there. The Elohim were group deity. They were not a singular force god. And then you have all the different El gods, El Shaddai, and you have, in a sense, another god that sits in the backdrop, who is, I believe, the God that Jesus came to reintroduce, who he called the Father. Because he's pretty clear, especially with the Sanhedrin, that the God they worshipped was Satan. And so you have an infiltration of another God in the Old Testament, the God that wanted to murder people, the God that demanded all kinds of sacrifices, the God that no sooner put down thou shalt not kill and then sent his troops out to murder. This is a morally conflicted religious system. And its moral conflicts continue to cascade down through the ages to the point where you would have people put a sword in Jesus' hand and have him come back and slaughter literally billions of people on this planet. Now, I don't read that Jesus in the Bible. I don't see the warlike God in the man who came as the Christ, known as Yeshua. What I see is a very clear teacher of moral right and wrong and spiritual purity, whose mission was to point us back to the divinity which exists within us natively. The morally conflicted God, on the other hand, required hundreds of laws. He required blood dripping off of the altar and the sweet savor going up of burning carcasses from his own creation. So you have to wonder what's happening there. Well, why would a God who created all these beautiful animals on this beautiful planet insist that you slaughter some so that he can smell blood burning on an altar? I think at some point, when you've refined your moral sense. It's possible to navigate through what are called the scriptures, like the scriptures, but there's lots of scriptures. You can navigate through them and you can begin to glean the true voice of God in all of it, the marauding across the planet of this war god, and then the moments when the god of love intervenes. And so you've been in a galactic battle for maybe 10,000 years, maybe longer, in terms of discernible history. And history points to that. History points to the fact that we have been caught in a galactic battle for a long time. We have warring angels. We have competing gods. We have collisions of bodies in the cosmos. And we have a theater called this planet Earth where apparently humanity dropped down out of a fifth dimensional spiritual state into this very low energy form called 3D, the Matrix. And this Messiah arrives in the Matrix and he's not of the Matrix and he doesn't operate within the rules of the Matrix. And he's capable of doing some pretty amazing things that most people can't wrap their minds around, because he has transcended the Matrix. But the people who translated the scriptures and the people who gave you the Jesus of the Bible basically took that crucified Jesus. They always talk about the crucified, the Christ and him crucified. How about Christ and him transfigured? How about Christ and he ascended? Why don't we talk about that? Because the remnants of the old war god in the Old Testament want us to stay focused on the death and on the blood. The Jesus I want to talk about went through the death experience to come out the other side, to demonstrate the process of resurrection and to demonstrate the process of ascension. He was perfectly capable of manifesting from a fifth dimensional state back into a third dimensional state. And in fact, there are allusions in history that he has done this many times. Now, if I haven't pissed anybody off out there so far, that statement probably will. But understand something. The Christ is a spirit which has manifested on the earth in different forms in different times. Certainly, the greatest of them was this man called Yeshua. And certainly, the greatest moral teacher was this man, Yeshua. And certainly, what he came to tell us in its spirit was preserved, even if the words themselves have been bastardized, altered, adulterated, and set up to give us another god to worship. But basically, Jesus came to show you who you are and to show you what you could be if you were capable of going to the place that he went, which had to do with the resurrection. But we don't talk about transfiguration. We don't talk about ascension. We talk about crucifixion. We talk about the death. And that's because of a lot of writings that were added to the words of Jesus, including most of the epistles, most of the pseudo manuscripts in that Bible, including, you know, here's the problem. People want to talk about pseudepigrapha, which is false books or books falsely named. Not one of your gospel books can demonstratively be linked to the alleged author. We don't know that Mark wrote Mark, Matthew wrote Matthew, Luke wrote Luke, or John wrote John. We don't have a clear transmission of documents. We accept the documents on faith, and we have the words in there that were recorded in them, which we believe were from Jesus. What I find odd is the rejection of the Nag Hammadi manuscripts and the Dead Sea Scrolls, two different bodies of text. By the way, Nag Hammadi is in Egypt, and of course the Dead Sea Scrolls were pulled out of Qumran, which was probably the Essene community that sat outside of mainstream Israel near the Dead Sea. And from these we get the Gospel of Thomas, we get the Gospel of Philip, the Apocryphon of John. That's a difficult book to read, I understand. But what you have is a corroboration of some of the words of Jesus and the heart and intent of Jesus interpreted through other writers. I mean, the purest of these is probably the Gospel of Thomas. This is Jesus' wisdom teacher. The Gospel of Philip, which speaks greatly of the bridal chamber, the marriage, the wedding supper, the things that have been so mangled by mainstream Christianity. And so there is a larger body of work that describes a lot of the things that we have looked for inside of this Bible. But what this Bible has done is it has constructed its own God. And the Christians who follow this book and cite it, usually, you know, using all the old King James English terms, have built up something of their own that doesn't really stand the record when you begin to look at the spiritual integrity of the God represented in this Bible. It doesn't appear to me that people who continue to pound away at judgment, to pound away at hell, who criticize and bloody each other, who on a regular basis condemn other people because they think they're, quote, apostate or fallen away, and trust me, I'm on the receiving end of that. It doesn't seem to me that these so-called alternative Christians have really stopped to think about what it is they're teaching. Because really, the book they use, most of their doctrines, come right out of Roman Catholicism. The worst parts of Roman Catholicism. The idea that you can continue to keep people entrained in their own sins. And, you know, do we want to go there? What are the sins? What sins are they? Are they your sexual sins? That's the first one. Are they your sins of dealing honestly with fellow people in the marketplace? Are they the sins that are hidden away in the closet, the family sins? It seems to me that nobody has a lockup on sin. And you can start with the first one. You can start with sex, because boy, does Christianity ever like to smack that around. But the truth of the matter is that they're as perverse as a pervert in an X-rated movie district, and they don't want to admit it. Their thoughts are perverse because they think of their fellow man as separate from themselves. They think that if somebody doesn't brandish their particular type of spiritual practice, they're going to be condemned to burning eternally in hell. So now they are worshiping this god of war, which is actually what was talked about in Daniel, interestingly enough. Pretty convinced the god of war isn't the Antichrist. I'm pretty convinced the god of war was that tetragrammaton god known as Yahweh. And so you have a lot of difficulties when you begin to build an edifice out of your own understanding, or out of the understanding that you've inherited and then reinterpreted to your own own ends. And so this God of the Bible, looks a lot like a false god to me. He looks like somebody who's probably pretty nasty, and looks like he's contrary to the spirit of Christ. Therefore, I think we would probably say that this probably is the spirit of Antichrist, and it is the spirit that has been worshipped by most Christians for over 2,000 years. Take a break here. Come back on the other side and see what else comes up on a free-flowing edition of The Threshing Floor. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the other part of the Threshing Floor. I'm Randy Moggins. This is Threshing Floor at threshingfloor-radio.com. It's hot here. It's been hot for a couple of days. It's the middle of the summer. It's July the 8th, 2012. I realize that it's been over 3 months since I did a Threshing Floor show. And there's really no particular purpose. I didn't really sit down to do this, but I did get to thinking about some things. And one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is I still watch from a distance what's called this alternative Christianity movement on the internet. And it's an amazing thing because it's all over the place. It's very divisive. It's very rancorous. There are conflicts going on. Everybody's going to hell. Everybody is going to be judged. Oh, that's a big one. And this goes back to this God of the Bible thing. You'll notice that they like to pull certain things out, and one of the things they like to pull out a lot is judgment. And judgment's really kind of an Old Testament kind of thing. The idea that your city gets sacked, your wives get raped, your children get burned, your house is gone. It's basically the Job cycle. And you have to wonder about that. Gosh, Job, here's a God that takes a guy that apparently is living a fairly good life. He seems kind of faithful. He's kind of prosperous. He's got a family. And all of that's kind of like completely wiped out because this war god of the Old Testament decides to test him. And we're given this story and we're told, well, you know, it's the faith of Job. And it looks to me a lot like this was a pretty nasty god that Job was reverencing. It looks like, you know, at this particular time, the God of love had sort of stepped back and allowed humanity to play out their pageant. And we have angels going back and forth between a council in the fifth, sixth, and seventh realms, probably the sixth realm. I know that everybody likes to assign all kinds of evil things to the number six. So we'll go with that. It's just a number. But you have this constant sense that humanity is put on spit and turned repeatedly. And that this God really enjoys watching as we squirm. And this is the malevolent universe theory that most religions are based upon. Most religions are based on distortions of their originators. If you simply look at the sayings of the Gautama Buddha, Buddhism is fine, but when you get into the legalism of it, when you get into the binding with karma, when you get into just the lifestyle of Buddhism, certainly Hinduism. Hinduism gave us the wonderful caste system, which has morphed itself in a million different ways and still lives with us today. Now it's called the economic system. And that's, well, if there's anything under judgment right now, it probably is the economic system. Yeah. But you see, this whole idea of judgment really doesn't stand up real well because you see evil men prosper and just men being oppressed. And somehow or another, that doesn't really fit comfortably with a God of love. I don't believe that the creator of humanity, of the universe, of the earth, of all the multiverses out there, this God who lives outside of time and space, I don't believe it was his intention. But you see, now we have another problem because we've rejected other things. You talk about rejected knowledge. We've rejected the idea that we're immortal because somebody took a verse out of the New Testament that said it's given to a man once to live and then comes the judgment. Well, there's a whole lot of people out there that have a sense that they're eternal, that they've always been eternal, that they've always lived, and that they have lived in other forms, other times, other places. Now, I don't really buy into reincarnation the way it's been taught. But since I'm dumping out all my toys this afternoon as I'm recording this, I do tend to believe in the idea that we're immortal. I do tend to subscribe to the idea of multiple lifetimes. I'm not convinced that they're linear time experiences, because linear time itself is a function of the matrix. And you can actually see that in the book of Revelation, in Revelation chapter 10, where the angel says time is no more. Time is a creation of movements in space. And so it tends not to be linear, even on the planet. It appears that nothing is linear and nothing is constant. The number pi has been redefined. Time no longer moves the way it used to. The atomic clocks have had to be recalibrated. The laws of mathematics and physics are undergoing rapid changes right now. Is it because the laws changed, or is it because of our understanding, or are we influencing the universe and the world around us? If Jesus said, did I not tell you in your law, which is what he says, that's what's translated, did I not tell you in your law that you are gods, then what was it he was trying to get to? Well, we were gods, and we are gods, and we need to get over our damn selves and realize something about who we are. A humanity is a completely unique creation. Within all of the multiverses, we are the subject of an incredible amount of interest from, I guess you would call them extraterrestrials, angels, other beings, other entities, other dimensions, are fascinated by us because we were created in the image of a god. And we were created in the image of the Elohim, who were the subcontractors for God in the original Genesis creation. Which, by the way, I've gone on record as saying is a mythology. It doesn't mean it's a myth. It means it's a mythology. It means that it's an abstract view. So, if Jesus affirms your godhood, and he says that the kingdom of God is within you, and as I had pointed out in a prior show somewhere, if the kingdom of God's within you, would not the kingdom of hell be there as well? I think so. And I think it's up to us to divide those kingdoms and then to decide which one we want to create and live in. This is not wishful thinking. It's not creating your own reality. It is simply the influence that you have as a divine being upon your own existence, your own creations, and your own godness. Well, that's just about as big a rejection of mainstream Christianity as anybody's going to come out with. It flies in the face of everything, because they're going to tell you that you are prideful, that you are vain, that you have blasphemed God. But I'm citing the words of Jesus. So, if Jesus did nothing except what he saw the Father doing, if he spoke what the Father spoke, and I believe that with all my heart, then this Jesus apparently had a pretty good grasp on godhood. And it would seem that what he came here to do was to show us godhood manifested on the earth in third and fourth dimensional space-time. And it would seem that if he also said these things and greater you will do, then why in the hell aren't we healing the sick and raising the dead and walking through walls and walking on water And why are we so pummeled down? And why do we have religion? And why do we have a religion that's based on a God of the Bible? Because the God of the Bible is a graven image. It's a three-dimensional construct. It's based on the Gutenberg press. It's based on the idea of taking things that are highly holographic and imprinting them into 3D space and then boiling it all down into something that's so dry and dead and disgusting as to not even want to be pursued anymore by anybody that ever gets a taste of their own genuine spiritual authority. So the brutal legalists out there on internet Christianity, each week they pick up their Bible, King James Version preferred, or in some cases demanded. And do they use this Bible to introspect? Do they use this Bible to look inside themselves? To look at the words of Jesus? Are they able to examine the text from the standpoint that it is what I described in the first half? It is a construct by a council. It is a work of the dialectic. Now, the whole group of people that I came out of love to talk about the dialectic. Well, the Bible's a work of the dialectic. The people who were at the Nicaea Council were dispatched there. As nearly as I can tell, some of them were illiterate. Most of the people in that time were illiterate. So why were they bothering to put together a book, a codice, as it eventually became, that they would call orthodoxy? Well, the reason for orthodoxy is because once you have orthodoxy, you have heretics. And once you have heretics, you have enemies. And enemies are how you empower a state. This is why the United States is in a state of perpetual war. Because you cannot maintain a power structure without enemies and without a state of constant war. That's reflected down to the micro level when you look at what professes itself as Christianity. And so, you know, a few months ago I came to the conclusion that I'm not a Christian. I can't possibly be that, because that requires that I constantly be at war with people, that I constantly measure other people by this tape measure found inside this book that was put together by a Roman emperor and then promulgated down through the centuries by the satanic system, and yeah, it is satanic, the satanic system of the Roman Catholic Church and all of her ugly little bastard babies called Protestantism, called Reformationism, called Evangelicalism, called Fundamentalism, called Alternative Internet Christianity. They're all titles and terms for variants of the same thing, and it's all dialectic because it's all designed to create splits and schisms within the consciousness of the human race. The split consciousness of the human race is the key problem with why we continue to have war and economic upheaval and hunger and want and death and perversion and mayhem. It is the doctrine on its broadest scale of this God of war, of this God of the Bible. Now, do I think you should burn the Bible? No. Should you ban it? No. Should you throw it away and never read it again? Nah. I don't think so. But it might be a good idea to take a look around at your world. And while you're doing that, dig down real deep into your own heart. And really find out the God that lives inside of you, because that spirit is the pure spirit. And that, again, refutes fundamental Christianity, because they found some verses by Paul. And remember, Paul was writing letters. Paul never wrote a book in the Bible. Never. For that matter, neither did John the Epistolist, the person who's called Peter that wrote 1st and 2nd Peter, or Jude, or James. These were all inner office memos that got leaked out and used to construct something, this gargantuan Frankensteinian type monster called Christianity. Because from that edifice they could erect the God of the Bible, the God of war. Thus, continuing to fracture humanity for another 2,000 years, while they all sat around and waited for Jesus to return, not realizing that, well, the return of Jesus Christ is an issue that really needs to be examined. What Jesus spoke of was the return of the Son of Man. The Son of Man, on one level, was Jesus, and on another level, the Son of Man is the ascended state of people who have the mind of Christ. I know you don't. Yeah, I know somebody out there will listen to this and they'll go, "I don't like that term, Christ consciousness." I don't either, because I don't think you can define God as consciousness. And I even think defining God as a mind is sort of a lowball. I think the way to describe God is as a pervasive presence that keeps our present state together in spite of how fractured we really are. And this creator who's in a continual process of creation, and he has given birth to a race of people 3 planets out from the sun under ideal conditions to support human life. And he placed a spark within them, and that spark came down with us from our fall from the fifth dimension. And our existence in the matrix has been the test of wills to see if we would find the living God within us and attempt to triumph over the God of war, the God of fractured conscience, the God of traumatized humanity, to see if we would continue to use religion to bloody and beat and brutalize each other. This is kind of why you have Islam as the whipping post right now. But given enough time, that would change as well. Islam's just a convenient enemy, and it's juxtaposed against Judaism, Zionism. And Zionism is really nothing more than the purest expression of the God of war, of the God of the Bible. I understand that a lot of remnant so-called alternative Christians out there don't agree with Zionism, but they still go around rejudaizing themselves. They want to be under a covenant. And a covenant is a legal term. And laws were created for lawless creatures. Understand that. The only reason you need laws is because you're a lawless creature. The higher law is the law of complete freedom. And the law of complete freedom is the place where what you do is no longer judged by any man. That's in the Bible too. You can look that up. It appears as though Jesus lived above the law. It appears as though the men of faith who are named in the book of Hebrews lived above the law. And Jesus took the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, and all of the zillions of little micro-laws that were inbred into the Hebrew culture, boiled it down to 3. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. So that's the first law, because you have to love yourself. You have to know yourself, because in you is the kingdom of God. And love God with all your heart. But you see, really, out of all of those, the one you need to know the most is to love your neighbor as yourself. Because if you have God within you, then you already love God and everything else proceeds from that. So that kind of gets me to the place where I go, okay, I've got all these religiously divided groups of people, and they really don't like each other, and they don't agree with each other, and every other week there's a new outcast, and I've been that outcast for quite a while now. And I know there's some people that are out there, and they're going, oh, pray for him, because he's fallen away, and he's under the fall, the strong delusion, and he's found other gods, and you know what? Don't pray for me, because I know that your prayers are of no effect anyway. I've already seen the power of faith that exists in that community. You people can't hang, you people can't heal a hangnail, much less mend the breach in a man's soul. I've seen it. The odd thing is, I've seen more healing in the last 6 months than I've seen in the last 12 years of my life. And I've seen profound miracles. And I have had incredible experiences. And all of that came because I rent my own veil. I threw away the laws of man, and I found the law of one, which is complete liberty and complete freedom. So I don't know how many people will hear this. I don't know how much of an audience there is for the show anymore. I don't care. I never did. If it reaches one person that needs to hear what I shared today, then it has served its purpose. Other than that, it's just me doing an audio blog. But I suspect that somebody out there needs some affirmation that they're not falling away, they're not apostate, they haven't set themselves on the road to perdition, and that somewhere in all of this, there's a spiritual path that's yours, that's unique, that's the God inside you. It's the God inside you that responds, and you begin to see miracles and signs, and you have peace. And you're not following the God of war of the Old Testament. And you're not locked down into this three-dimensional Gutenberg monolith, the God of the Bible. And you're no longer chained by what people's opinions are, or what man's teachings are, or what somebody said you should believe. You simply have the freedom to be, the freedom to live, the freedom to heal, and the freedom to love. And you have no enemies because you know how to forgive. And you have power because you understand what love really is. I think I'll leave it at that for now. If you're hearing this, keep checking back on the site. There are some things that I'm going to break out on the threshing floor. I still continue to do some studies, and I have some things to say to you in the months ahead. As we go through the summer, keep your eyes open, because there's a lot going on in the political landscape, in the financial world, but more importantly, we're in a major shift right now. Open up your heart. Open up your third eye. Learn to pray without human understanding. And for God's sakes, start learning to love each other before it's too late. We can still heal the fractured consciousness of humanity on planet Earth. I'm Randy Moggins. This has been The Threshing Floor.